Welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and the studios of WMOT-FM. Next year, the United States Supreme Court is expected to decide whether police need a warrant before attaching a GPS device to a motor vehicle. The case is called United States v. Jones. It was heard November 8th in oral arguments at the Supreme Court building in Washington, and it raises issues that affect both First Amendment rights and Fourth Amendment rights. Dr. Lance Selva is here today to discuss it with us. He is an attorney and he is a professor in the Department of Criminal Justice at MTSU. And we'll dig into this right after we dig into a few words from MTSUnews.com.
Here are some of the stories now on MTSUnews.com, the university's news and information website. The MTSU Foundation recently celebrated its golden anniversary. The MTSU Foundation received more than $8.5 million in gifts this year, and today is generating more than $1.25 million in endowment income annually. MTSU will offer after school at the Confucius Institute on Tuesdays and Thursdays starting January 17th in room 106 of Peck Hall. Classes will be held from 3:15 to 5:15 in the afternoon. The classes will focus on basic conversation, entry-level vocabulary, and writing Chinese characters. For more information, call the Confucius Institute at 615-494-8696. That's 615-494-8696. And for MTSU News anytime, go to mtsunews.com.
Dr. Lance Selva, thanks for being with us here today.
Good to be here.
Let's go over the basics of the case first. I understand that Mr. Jones was a suspected drug dealer, and the GPS device was attached to his Jeep so that officials could track his whereabouts, his comings and goings, and hopefully catch him attempting to sell or procure illegal drugs, correct?
That's correct. They actually attached it to the undercarriage of his vehicle that happened to be in a public, I think it was in a shopping center parking lot. So they attached it, essentially tracked him for 28 days continuously. The particular device in that case involved 10-second reports or GPS data reports, every 10-second interval, but for 28 days continuously tracked him. What was interesting about this case is he was just loosely suspected of being involved in drug trade based on his ownership of a nightclub. But he never got charged with any possession of drugs. What he got charged on the basis of was in running these patterns and of the record. They had 2,000 pages, I think, of records over this 28-day period. They noticed that he had made a number of trips to a certain, I guess you'd call it a stash house. It actually was a small warehouse, but a stash house. And they ended up charging him on conspiracy. They never found him in possession of drugs. But since he'd visited it in a more or less timed pattern on a number of occasions, they felt that he had to be involved. So that's the basis of his charge.
He was also in possession of a great deal of money.
$70,000. That's correct.
And this is all in the Washington, D.C. area, right?
Yes, I went into Maryland, too. But yeah, that area.
Okay.
Right.
So the idea is, on the part of Mr. Jones's attorney, that technology has surpassed jurisprudence's ability to deal with the complications.
We got to go way back to 1967, where we laid out this expectation of privacy approach, because this is the basis for the challenge in this case. It was based out of a Katz versus United States case. You know, prior to that case, it was generally conceded that you're only protected if you happen to be on private property as opposed to public property. But in the Katz case, you had this gentleman who was basically a bookie who went into a public telephone booth. And of course, 1967, for those of us who remember, was like Superman type of telephone where you could actually close the door. He went in there. They felt this is where he was doing running his bookmaking operation, and they put a transmission device on the outside of that phone booth, record his phone calls, and use those to convict him. The Supreme Court of the United States took up that case, and what they ended up holding and issuing was this new approach to determining when somebody is protected in their privacy rights. And they said it's not based on where you are, but that it attaches to people, not places. And they laid out what is a very famous test. It's called the Reasonable Expectation of Privacy Test, that if somebody exhibits some subjective expectation of privacy, such as if you put up a privacy fence around your backyard, that's exhibiting an expectation of privacy from ground-level observations. When this guy, in the cat's case, closed that door, he was not expecting his conversation to be overheard. Second part of the test laid out in that case was that society, or that expectation, has to be one that society is prepared to be recognized as being justifiable and reasonable. You know, certain people might say, well, we intended to keep something private, but if it's not something that the rest of us would view as being a reasonable exhibition of privacy interest and or expectation, then it's not recognized as being reasonable. The basis of these GPS cases and the real difficulty and where these come out of the early technology and the cases that are used and argued on behalf of the government in this Jones case is that the GPS is nothing more than just an enhancement device of what the officers could have normally done by just conducting normal follow-the-car surveillance as we used to do. Then it got a little bit more sophisticated with the use of beepers, which are very primitive now in relation to this GPS apparatus,
right,
where officers would still have to be on the roadway, but they could be out of sight, and they would just monitor the intensity of the beeping on a little screen. The closer the beeping was, then the closer they knew they were to that particular subject. But they still had to be in a vehicle within some distance from that honing device.
Right.
These GPS systems do not involve any physical type of surveillance out on the highway anymore. This can be done literally in a officer's office.
Right.
By using a computer.
If I see Mr. Jones drive down East Main Street in Murfreesboro at 2:45 p.m., I can be called into court to testify that I saw him do that. But if you have a GPS device, you could be in Des Moines, Iowa, and know that Mr. Jones was driving down East Main Street in Murfreesboro at 2:45 p.m. It's not the same thing.
Not only driving, but how fast he was going and how many stops and where those stops were located very precisely. And what is different is this data can be accumulated. You could just track him for, let's say, a month, then get on your computer. You can run that entire backlog, that entire record over that month's time just on your computer. It's something, it's much different than if you were behind that vehicle and taking notes that, hey, at 3 p.m., you know, this is where he was, because that's the only thing it's going to indicate is what you actually saw. But this is a different quality of data that is able to be accumulated by the police.
Now, I mentioned in the opening First Amendment rights, which include speech, press, and religion, but people might wonder, well, what First Amendment right is involved here? As you mentioned, they could accumulate the data that tells you where he went, which means you'd know whose house he went into and presumably who he might have seen there. And freedom of assembly comes into play there, the right to associate with whomsoever you want.
Right, what gathering he went to. This was one of the arguments, I believe, that the NAACP has historically put up, is that the gatherings were monitored when you know, the government knew about them. I'm sure that can be said for other groups now, but it puts a chilling effect. You don't expect to be followed 24 hours a day. It's not only just a freedom of association, but it might be who's to know whether or not a government official would want to follow one of his competitors. I'm sure Mr. Our recent presidential candidate just got out of the race. It would have been a lot easier to either know or not know what he had actually been up to if he had been followed one of these devices.
Well, not only does it come into play with regard to cheating, but suppose law enforcement put a GPS on someone's vehicle and found out that he went to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, for example. Does the government have the right to know that you went to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting?
Or abortion clinic.
Yeah, be very embarrassing. Yeah. People could lose their jobs.
and might not have anything to do with any criminal investigation.
Right.
Right.
We'll take a brief break right here, and we'll be right back with more on MTSU on the Record right after this.
The MTSU Educational Talent Search, or METS, reaches out to students in grades 6 through 12 in Coffee, Grundy, and Warren counties. We provide youngsters who have college potential with educational and financial aid counseling and guide them as they determine their educational and career goals. More than 95% of Educational Talent Search students graduate from high school, and more than 79% enroll in post-secondary education. This is METS Coordinator Debbie Frisbee.
For all the latest MTSU information, go to mtsunews.com.
We're talking about a U.S. Supreme Court case with Dr. Lance Silva from the Department of Criminal Justice regarding the attachment by law enforcement of GPS devices to motor vehicles in order to track people who they might suspect of criminal activity. You mentioned earlier that the device was attached to Mr. Jones's Jeep in a public parking lot. Does the Katz case you mentioned differentiate between whether the vehicle's on public property or private property?
That's an excellent question. Now, here's the analysis, and this is what the court's going to be dealing with. Under the Katz case, because this all goes back to the expectation of privacy test that Katz court enumerated, what a person knowingly exposes to the public, you're not going to lay claim to a privacy interest. Even if you're in your own home, if you knowingly expose something, even though you're inside, let's say have your curtains drawn back, if you're exposing yourself to, let's say, a group of people that are waiting on the street for a bus, you cannot claim an expectation of privacy if you're doing something illegal.
Right.
On the other hand, and where it gets confusing, is what a person intends to keep as private, even in an area that's accessible to the public, may very well be protected. For instance, MTSU is a public institution. But maybe people don't realize that every time you walk into that restroom, you have an expectation of privacy that you are not going to arbitrarily be searched by the police coming in the bathroom to make sure that you're doing whatever you're supposed to be doing. It protects us, and society recognizes that as being a reasonable expectation of privacy that protects you against those arbitrary intrusions without some legal authority or justification to
That's
do so.
That's come into play in cases where some pervert, burrows a hole or plants a camera in a bathroom stall in a public bathroom so that they can watch women relieving themselves. Well, that's clearly a violation of expectation of privacy.
Well, sure,
isn't it?
And we all recognize that. And I think that's what, you know, the Katz approach, which I think is going to dictate this case pretty heavily. What is society's expectation in regard to the police not having a secure warrant, maybe not even having probable cause to believe you're engaged in a crime, and yet having the right to put a GPS device on your car and follow you around indefinitely until maybe they catch you doing something? And that falls under, you know, a general warrant, which was what this Fourth Amendment was created to counteract against the British after, you know, we succeeded in our revolution, so to speak.
What is the counter-argument coming from the Justice Department?
Counter-argument primarily is that you, by being out on the highway, are exposing yourself to others who can clearly see what direction you're going in, and sometimes if they follow you maybe a mile, they'll see that you pulled into Kroger's or you pulled into a bar. So you're exposing what you're doing at the time you're out on a public highway, and that you don't have a privacy expectation, because anybody, including the police who could have been out on the highway, would have been able to see you. It was viewed as simply an enhancement of the vision of the police. Okay, it didn't substitute for their vision, but it was an enhancement. GPS is different, because it's going to provide data coming from a satellite. The data itself would not be observable by the public. And this is where state cases and this particular case, the Jones case, that came out of the D.C. Circuit, by the way, and is a federal court case.
Right.
Looked at the duration and the intrusive nature of GPS as being something entirely different than than tracking a little beeper, due to the fact that it really is now substituting for the vision. I mean, it's not an enhancement right. of vision. It is a substitute in a much different way, particularly the duration.
If I, as a private citizen, bought a GPS device and attached it to the vehicle of someone I wanted to track, would I not be committing a crime?
Yes, you would. In fact, there's a particular statute. I can cite it for you. It's in the Tennessee Code Annotated 39-13-606. And basically what it does is it prevents private citizens from being able to attach a device to anyone's vehicle. It's not just vehicle. It could be a boat, another motorized operational type of thing. But criminalizes that unless the person whose vehicle you want to attach it to consents. Okay? Now, the two exceptions are, one is somewhat funny, and I'll be probably using this myself, is dealing with minor kids who live at home with their parents. The parents are allowed to track them when they are using the family vehicle to make sure that little Johnny or Joni are where they're supposed to be.
Right.
The other exception is for law enforcement, but what is strange about this is it just says they'll be able to use it as long as it's done under state and federal law. The problem we have is we've got all, at the federal level, all these conflicting opinions, and at the state level, actually, the states that have ruled on warrantless GPS tracking have said we're not going to allow it. We're demanding that warrants be used. But those states have looked to their own state constitutions to protect the privacy interests of their state citizens, as opposed to the Fourth Amendment, which is a little bit looser in its protection ability.
So we have a patchwork of state statutes and opinions and no national uniformity on this
issue. That's correct. That's why I think one of the reasons, not the only reason, but one of the reasons that the United States Supreme Court will agree to hear a case and decide on it is when there is a conflict among the different federal circuits. They're not worried about the states, but they're worried about the federal circuits. And there have been approximately four or five significant federal circuit courts. The majority have not ruled on it, just a minority of federal circuit courts, but their rulings are based on different aspects of it. And this case that is before the Supreme Court was the only one of the out of five. The other four said you don't need warrants, okay? But this one went against that. And I think the Supreme Court of the United States has taken it up to clarify what they feel needs to be clarified.
Time to take another break. We'll be right back with more MTSU on the Record after this.
The Middle Tennessee State University Women's Studies Research Series features compelling monthly talks on gender-related topics by faculty and graduate students. The series offers a chance to learn about research in progress and to chat with faculty in an informal setting. All lectures are free and open to the public and are held on the MTSU campus. This is Associate Professor of Journalism, Dr. Jane Marcellus.
For all the latest MTSU information, go to mtsunews.com.
Our guest is Dr. Lance Silva, who is a professor in the Department of Criminal Justice. We're talking about the Global Positioning System case that the U.S. Supreme Court will rule on next year. This group called the Center on the Administration of Criminal Law sides with the Justice Department in this case, pointing to, and I quote from Joan Biskupic's article in USA Today, published November 19th, points to the cost benefits of satellite surveillance in tough financial times. It says GPS surveillance requires fewer personnel hours and less cost than having agents physically follow someone, as you pointed out earlier in our program. But is this an ends justify the means argument? How can cost effectiveness be a justification for a potential constitutional violation?
That's exactly right. It'd be very cost effective if we wanted to run surveillance on a mass of our population to do so for really relatively little cost, as opposed to footwork hours expended by officers that are conducting individual investigations. But the one thing our Fourth Amendment does not look at really is to weigh your privacy for the expediency of a criminal prosecution. That should not be part of the measure or determinant of whether or not this is a violation of privacy rights or security, for that matter. Because one of the great fears of this is really that the surveillance technique so dramatically is expanded in its capabilities that you're not talking about just trailing or using GPS tracking on several individuals. This could be used virtually on towns, cities, and it's different than public cameras that we have. Even here in Murfreesboro, we've got little public cameras at red lights and on the roadways for traffic enforcement, but those things are set. This follows the person's car.
That's right.
It's mobile. Even if a person goes across country, officers can track that person out of their own jurisdiction across country without moving from their computer screen. But that's a little bit different when you know the cameras are there and you are visible to them, as opposed to somebody without your knowledge and permission sticking something on your car and you will not even realize that you're being followed around. And I want to bring up one thing that I hope we have made clear. This is a case that involves warrantless GPS tracking. The government is wanting to use this and not have to go before a judge for the authorization to put it on somebody's vehicle. That is, it's totally different and really not opposed and not illegal, so to speak, where officers would have to go apply for a warrant and have judicial authorization. In that situation, you would have some oversight of the police. Without asking these officers to go secure a warrant before they place this on somebody's vehicle, they are operating, and I'm talking about the police, law enforcement, are operating in the dark. There is no public oversight. There's no accountability because you might not, and I'm talking about as a society or community, even know that it's existing.
With the furor over warrantless wiretaps under the Patriot Act since 9/11, could you take the temperature of the public? If you were to do so, what would you think about the demeanor of the public or the taste or the lack of taste for being followed with a GPS tracking device without a warrant?
You know, there are some individuals that claim our sensibility has been lessened in regard to oversight by the government in the name of national security. I suspect that if people realize that they were the susceptible victims of this, that their expectation of privacy would be against this warrantless application of these devices. And again, what you're talking about is where they do not seek prior judicial authorization.
We would not need a special court, a technological FISA court, would we, to handle such warrants if they were necessary? Any judge could make up his or her mind about whether or not a warrant should be issued in a case like this at any level, local, state, or federal, right?
Well, actually, I have spoken with some officers and I've spoken with some judges. And I can tell you the officers in Murfreesboro have been good about going to a judge for authorization. And they don't want the fallout of doing things in a secret way when they could have been more open and about it by going before a judge and seeking the authority to do that, which right now is somewhat unclear.
Time for one more break. We'll be back with more MTSU On the Record right after this.
Women in Science and Engineering, or WISE, helps college women prepare for and become involved in science-related careers. WISE nurtures women's interest in these fascinating and critical fields and provides mentoring and networking opportunities. The group's main goal is to assure women of their importance in all scientific and technical fields and to promote equal opportunity and treatment of women in science. I'm Dr. Judith Iriarte-Gross, WISE Advisor.
For all the latest MTSU information, go to mtsunews.com.
Dr. Lance Selva is our guest from the Department of Criminal Justice at MTSU, talking about a U.S. Supreme Court case that will decide whether or not law enforcement acted appropriately in attaching a GPS device to the vehicle of a suspected drug dealer. Everybody plays this parlor game, especially inside the Beltway. They look at which president appointed which justice and whether or not that president was conservative or liberal. And given the current makeup of the court, if you were a betting man, could you bet which way this was going to go?
There is one prior case dealing with a highly technological device. It's called a heat sensor or an imager. That police, and actually we had a couple of these machines in Murfreesboro, where you can actually monitor the heat index that emanates from inside somebody's house. But technically what you're doing is measuring it as it escapes the house. It's sort of like your vent on your dryer in the wintertime. You can see that hot air coming out, which would indicate that somebody might, if there is a bright enough little glow on the screen that registers the heat index, would indicate that somebody has a growing operation of marijuana, which requires a great deal of energy and heat for the lamps that's used. But the Supreme Court of the United States took up a case, the Kelo case, and put their foot down, interestingly enough, and by foot down, I'm talking about they looked solely to this new technology as being so highly and potentially dangerous in the sense that you basically are getting to know what is happening in the house. And some of these machines actually could be calibrated, and fire people can tell you this, to pick up the heat of a body that's moving inside a building. And the Supreme Court, and it was interesting that it was the most conservative members of the court, said there comes a point when technology is too intrusive, and that point is right now. And I'm hoping that they go back to that case because this is of the same nature in its quality and just the intrusive nature of it. And I think that's what the court is fearful of, is that these types of devices are doing something more than just observing people in public or picking up overhearing too loud people in a bar and being able to overhear it in the next booth. That's not what we're talking about. You brought up a question. I probably could have addressed this a little bit more clearly, but you asked me about the arguments the government makes. Their major argument is that GPS is so widespread, everybody has GPS. I have it in my my iPhone right there. People have it in their vehicles, just the GPS tracking. All cars are going to start being equipped at some time with GPS tracking. Think about the tracking capabilities and monitoring of the population. And the government, one of their major arguments is that since it's so widespread and everybody uses it, that the police should be able to use it. But go back to the fact that there are a number of states, Tennessee included, that have made it illegal due to the invasion of privacy for private citizens to use it for tracking purposes. It falls under our stalking statutes, too.
My parents never thought that everybody does it was an appropriate excuse for bad behavior.
My parents did, too, so there's your answer.
Dr. Lance Silva, thanks for being our guest today on MTSU on the Record.
I enjoyed it. Thank you.
I did, too.
MTSU On the Record, a news and information program about Middle Tennessee State University, is produced by the university's Marketing and Communications Office, which is solely responsible for its content. Read more about MTSU at our website, mtsunews.com. Podcasts of this program are available at mtsunews.com and on iTunes.